Greetings and peace is blackouts and boycotts, blackout and boycotts, justice or else, blackouts and boycotts. We welcome you this evening. We're talking about justice in the public schools. Welcome again. My name is James X. Muhammad, the National Minister of Education for the new Black Panther Party, Black Educators for Justice Director. We're waiting for our other host. We're waiting for Sister Roxy, and we're waiting for Sister Aminette, and we're waiting. Maybe even Dr. Malik Zula Shabazz will come in this evening. So we welcome you to Blog Talk Radio Live, the Blackouts and the Boycotts. Well, we thank, first of all, before we do anything, we always thank God, thank Allah, thank Dr. Malik, and thank the Blackout, the nationalblackout.org, for bringing me in this evening. I hope and pray that we're well. Hope and pray we're moving forward. We're just going to open quickly by saying, in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we thank God for life. We thank Him for this opportunity to bless us, guide us, and strengthen us with much success. We greet you this evening. I'll use in my language, we say in Arabic, As-salamu alaykum, but we say peace. We say black power. We say Ashe, Hotep. We say even my sisters who are Yoruba, we say Ikaru. We welcome you. We welcome you. We welcome you to Blog Talk Radio, which is a national blackout.org. All praise the Lord. I'm hoping and waiting for other co-hosts to come in. I don't know if Sister Roxy's on the line yet, but we're not going to delay. Sister Roxy, are you there? Sister Roxy's not there yet, so we're waiting. We're also going to get other hosts in this evening. Sister Aminette. Sister Aminette will be coming in. So where we're starting, we're looking at the blackouts and the boycotts. The topic is pretty simple. It's called Justice in the Public Schools and the National Blackout. What is going on in South Carolina? What's going on in Missouri? What's going on in Chicago? What's going on in Jacksonville in the public schools of America? Justice or else? Everyone is aware at this point, it's known all across the country, what Ben Fields, this angry white man who took this beautiful young black woman and threw her from one side of the classroom to another. Ben Fields, the school resource officer who took a 16-year-old black woman and threw her from one side of the classroom to another, handcuffed and dragged her out. Naya and Shakira, both arrested for standing up for what's right. So we welcome you this evening, brothers and sisters. This is a different format. It's a little quiet, but we're going to dialogue. We're going to talk this evening on justice in the public schools, justice or else, the blackouts and the boycotts. So without delay, first of all, we give honor and praise to God. We thank Dr. Malik Zula Shabazz for opening up the line and allowing us to have a few words. I'm just receiving a message. Do you want to stand by? There seem to be some technical difficulties. It says, I'm on the line. Oh, praise the Lord. Dear sister, my sister has made it. She's on the line, and the lines are open. I'm so grateful to Sister Roxy, who took care of all our technical difficulties, the problems that we were having. First of all, we're going to talk tonight about education, and we're going to talk a lot about justice in the public schools and the national blackouts, the boycotts, the walkouts, the sit-downs, the move-around, and all those beautiful words that we're going to deal with tonight and how we move forward. How do we move forward as a people during this most dangerous time? We should understand that the blackout and the boycotts are not protests, but this is a movement. This is the blackout movement. This is the blackout and the boycotts movement. This is a movement where we're going to retake the economic dollars that we have been spending for many, many years. I want to say hundreds of years, since 1863, since the so-called Emancipation Proclamation. Dollars that we have been spending, that we've used unwisely, that we have given to the enemies, that have not helped us to organize and never helped us unite. They helped us, never helped us to do anything for ourselves. And so this evening, we're going to address a lot of issues. Dr. Malik had asked me to make sure to give everyone the greetings. I hope and pray my brother's well. He's speaking at Howard University tonight. He's speaking to the Howard University students. And he's speaking to them on a variety of issues. We had the fortune and we had the pleasant experience from hearing from Dr. James Small a few nights ago on Black Power Radio. We have to give accolades and applause to our sister Nisi X, our sister Roxy, sister I believe is Karen, sister Ayana, and other sisters that were hosting last night. Beautiful, beautiful dialogue, the beautiful dialogue that took place. Our sisters hosted and talked about the blackout and the boycotts. And we're going to talk about even Dr. King's book, Why We Can't Wait, and Where Do We Go From Here? What do we do next? What do we do next? How do we begin to unite? How do we begin to pool our resources and do for self? So with that being said, Sister Roxy, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, praise the Lord. Yes, ma'am, I'm great, sister. It's so great to hear your voice. It's great to have a co-host. I'm going to have to get the information to our other sister and get her to come out. What we're looking at is this. We should be talking about where do we go from here. Dr. Malik want to remind us that we are to have the boycotts going on in cities all across the country. So before we leave tonight and get off this line, we're going to talk about Jacksonville. We're going to talk about Waycross with Bobby Worthy. We're going to talk about what's going on in Philadelphia, what's going on in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about what's going on in all these cities in Atlanta. We're going to talk a little bit about the blackout and the boycott and how we continue to carry this message as a venue. But this message and this word that we're speaking can only be effective if we involve our young people, we involve our teenagers, we involve the college students, and that's our focus tonight in this whole education paradigm shift that needs to take place. Sister has indicated to me, and she said something, I heard her. You have come from a family of educators, Sister Roxy? Is that what I understand?
Yes, yes, from a long line of educators from Mississippi. Back in the days, education before segregation, desegregation, you know, black students wasn't allowed to go to public school. So your church community is where you attended school. And, you know, the people of the community and the church members, they're the one that implemented programs and taught you, you know. And a lot of the older community, they didn't receive a education like we received, you know, 12 years of schooling and college and stuff like that. They made it to the first grade, third grade, fourth grade, you know, just got the basics, and then they went on into working. So my family, we have came from all the way from that to working into the public school system, implementing programs to the youth and, you know, helping them to be productive citizens. And that was just overall for everybody. But we need to start implementing programs for our black community to make sure that the black community is productive.
One of the ways that we're looking at and moving is we're talking about reinvesting our dollars. And so while we're going to hold this money, and our young people on the college campuses don't have a lot of money, we wanted to make sure we understood exactly what's happening in the school system and what's happening at the college level. And I have to say, this is a very, very important point to understand, that we have never been taught how to use our money effectively for ourselves. From the sharecroppers, from, we say, the house Negroes and the field Negroes, any money that the black man had been able to save, he was always in debt to our enemies, always in debt to the European, the Caucasian. How was he in debt? Many of the blacks, many of the former slaves or slaves, I wouldn't say former slaves, because we're still called by the honor of Elijah Muhammad, Ms. Farrakhan, as lawful captives today. Many of the slaves who live on the plantations, who did not leave, who were sharecroppers, who could not read and could not write, were taken advantage of. And many times they would have to pay for the rent, they paid for the food, they paid for the clothing, whatever money they made, any profit they made from the crops they grew, they were always in debt. Always in debt to the slave master. So they could never, ever leave that condition. And when we did leave those conditions and we went north, seeking better opportunity in places like Chicago, in New York, in Philadelphia, in many, many urban communities, when we went to these places, we always were at the bottom, even in Detroit. That's why in Detroit, they have a place called Black Bottom. In Jacksonville, they have a place called Black Bottom. In Georgia, they have a place in Milledgeville, near there, somewhere in Sandersville, where Honorable Elijah Muhammad is from. They have a place called Deep Step. That's where black folks met. It's deep. If you've never been in there, I've been down there. It's deep. You go down into like a ravine. It's dark red clay. And you just keep going down. And that's where black folks held their church. They held their church. Well, they held a meeting. They held a...
So I'm into that red clay. You know, red clay, dirt, gravel roads, being in the dark, you know, not that much lightning or whatever, you know, country, real country. So, yeah.
Yes.
I can understand, like, you know, when you live in that type of environment, you have limited resource, limited access, you know?
Oh, yes, and that was in Georgia. And so many people never left Mississippi. They moved to places like Georgia. They moved into the Carolinas. Real briefly, I'll just lay this out for history so we can get the conversations going. It was to be understood that two major ports where slaves were brought into this country. As early as 1555, when the ship Jesus was brought into the Carolinas. I said the Carolinas, not north or south, because at one point it was called just the Carolinas. The other place they're brought into is Louisiana. That was brought into New Orleans. I've done some historical research and found out they were brought right here in Jacksonville, a place where they have called the Landing, which has been elevated above the water level, is a place where the ships would pull in. It's called the Landing. And in that place called the Landing, they would take the slaves off the ships, and they would move them. Where they move them? I live in a Jacksonville in an area called the North Side. This North Side area is about 10 miles from about 10 miles from downtown. And guess what? I said it's 10 miles. It may be only 8. And the area I live in is called Slave Quarters. This used to be called the Slave Quarters area, which ran along the St. John River, another area here called Rebar River, which is a tributary into the St. John River, which leads into the ocean. So they come in on these ships, and they would bring the slaves in. Why am I saying this? Saying this because we have to understand where we've come from and where we're going. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, the people never treated us right will not teach us right. So our focus is justice in the public schools and the national blackout. An article in the Final Call called it terrorism in public schools. So since we've never been taught properly, we've never been educated properly, we're actually educating ourselves, which is why I mentioned to one of the sisters that you don't have to worry about a PhD piled high and deep. The knowledge and the information that's amongst us as black people exceeds any degree and credentials, which is why homeschooling is increasing. There are over 100,000, some say as much as 200,000 black people right now in this country that are homeschooling their children. The problem, you don't get any money for homeschooling. They're changing the laws, and the laws are being changed in such a way that if you're going to educate your child at home, your child still must pass the state standardized test. And because your child must pass the test, you must register with the local school system, and you can do all the homeschooling you want, but you still must pass their test, and you must use their resources and books, which means that any money that comes from the state or the federal government goes to the school where your child would be enrolled, even if they're not enrolled, but you get no money to educate your child at home. So one of the topics we want to talk about, we want to talk about homeschooling, we want to talk about terrorism in the classroom, we want to talk about how does this deal with the black economics, how does it deal with us, how does it deal with the black economics and what we should be doing from here. So we'll talk about Missouri University. And we'll talk about the million-dollar slaves. So those are the three main points we wanted to focus on tonight, specifically to the homeschooling and how if you're homeschooling your child, how the policy and the laws are being changed that you can't even You really can't educate your child at home the way you want to, because you still must register with the state and the local school districts. So you're still being monitored. Sister Roxy, I don't know how much your family has been involved in homeschooling, but it's a concept where we're pulling our babies out of these, what we call plantations of miseducation, the killing fields in America, where they come under these yellow caskets every morning. Some have never heard me use that before. The yellow caskets pick your baby up at the bus stop. You take your baby to the public schools, the plantation, the killing fields. They program them all day long, and then they come home. And because many are so tired or worn down, they don't have time to deprogram them to bring them to light of who we really are and who they are. So what happens? They become the next 21st century slave.
Well, I'm in agreement with that. Not to cut you off, but I'm in agreement with the school system. I mean, to me, it's like the biggest daycare system, because a lot of parents, if they had the choice, they wouldn't have their kids in public schooling, because your kids aren't learning, because they go through 12 years of schooling and then they come out still unskilled. They're not ready for the workforce. They have to go into college and to continue their education just to be workforce ready, which to me, it just puts students into debt. So you coming in, you get prepared for a job, but then you already have thousands and thousands of debt onto there. Getting back to the daycare system, and the way the school implements the program to like a prison system. I mean, they used to have corporate punishment up in there to where your kid could be spanked or disciplined at school, and then a lot of people, you know, kids was getting abused, child abuse was coming up in there, kids would have bruises and stuff from them hitting them or smacking them too hard with the paddle, and so they took corporate punishment out. So when I seen the police officer come into the school and grab a young lady out of her chair and choke hold her and slam her to the ground and drag her across the floor and pin her arms behind of it with that much force, and with him being trained to take down a 300-pound man and you using that force on a child, I'm like, oh, my God, this is really getting real. You know, like, you have police coming into the school brutalizing a child at school when they took corporate punishment out, where you have administrators trained to deal and discipline kids. They don't have the authority to do that, but a police officer off the street can. So that was an alarming to me.
You know, you just had a point, sister, that should be studied and talked about. Police officers in the public schools discipline your children. The school, even if it's a school resource officer, you may not know, and many may not know this, I'm sure you do because you come from a family of educators, the school resource officers under the Obama administration have been deputized and federalized. This is why you see they're riding out. Notice they have on the back of their car, they have the police. But if you don't look at the logo on the side, it will say school police, but they're still deputized. So if you break the law, if you're speeding, a school resource officer, the way they've been deputized, they can pull you over because you're violating the law. These are the same people that's in the public schools that's dealing with our children. These are the same people that when your child refuses to put away the cell phone, or your child may have a few words with the teacher, or the teacher feels threatened, they call and they press that button, and here comes 911. All they have to do, and they're creating a fear in the babies, conscious and subconscious, they call. All they do is say, I'm going to call Blue. Or you don't want to do it, I say, I'm going to call Blue. This is what happened in South Carolina with Naya and Shakira. They obey and respect the law, but they were put in a position to be threatened and intimidated by a white racist that says that white supremacy, white privilege is still alive in the public schools. So when you talk about the SROs and the discipline that goes on, they walk around with a gun in their waist. Why would you walk around with a gun in your waist in the public schools? If you go look at the history of the schools, even under European study, the schools were considered sanctuaries. They were considered churches. They were considered places of worship where people studied. As a matter of fact, the first schools here in this country were in churches.
Yeah.
Go back to studying Horace Mann and the Little Red Schoolhouse. You know, they were going to the Little Red Schoolhouse, and we were going to the plantation to work. We were going out in the fields to pick cotton, just to be understood. So even when you start talking about Brown versus the Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, 1954, that's ended, are supposed to have ended by law, school desegregation, which ended separate and unequal, which it never ended separate and unequal, and the schools is now, if you don't know, the schools are more, the students are more separated and segregated today because of something that many are bought into, talking about staying in the homeschooling issue, is charter schools and magnet schools. The research was done as early as 1980s. That magnet schools and charter schools is the code word for diversity and multiculturalism are the racial words, which still means school desegregation. And so even when they talk about lotteries and up north, you can go to school because of a lottery. You still are talking about schools where the white schools or the European schools on the other side of town receive more money than the schools or in the community schools which we have in the black community. So you start talking about school resource officers, they are the new prison guards. And I want to say this, Sister, and go right back to you, Sister Roxy, because this is important to understand. Why did I say the new prison guards? When you drive your baby up to that school, and many of the schools I've worked at and need to understand, they don't have barbed wire fence to keep people from breaking into the school. They have one gate in and one gate out in the front. They have one gate in and one gate out where the buses come in. That's not to keep anyone from breaking into school. That's to keep your babies from getting out. The schools is the new prisons. The schools are the new school-to-prison pipeline. The prison industrial complex. Because when your baby can't read, they get off reading level by grade 3 and 4, they already have the data to show that they can never catch up in reading. Not that they cannot. The school system is not designed to get them back on track, but it's designed so they start building prison beds and they start building prison wards and putting in these new facilities for what? To send your baby to prison and not to school. In some places, it costs $90.
I'm with that. I mean, they implement the programs that are implemented with the uniforms and making them all dressed a certain type of way. Like you say, they're using cell phones, considered contraband, because, like, even my daughter, she's in the fifth grade. She had her cell phone confiscated, and I have to pay $15 to get it back. And I looked up in there to see was it a rule. Not only is it a rule, it's a state law. Like, it has the code of Texas up under it stating, like, yeah, they can charge you $15 if your child's phone is confiscated. And, you know, and with it being still implementing, you know, segregation, my high school that I attended in my town, they had separate proms. There was white prom and black prom. There was white this and black that. They didn't have a white and black prom until 2008. So that was what, 7 years ago?
A white and black prom in 2008.
Yeah, that's what they didn't. The white people in my town, they didn't want their kids to interact with the black schools. They had their stuff at the country club. They didn't want to invest their money to have it with us because basically we was okay to go to school with their kids, but they still considered us to be heathens, uneducated, because they had black homecoming queen, white homecoming queen. If you look in the books, history books, our yearbook, you're going to see everything was separated. They did not want to come together until, like, 2008. The kids was like, they went, the white kids, they rebelled against their parents. It was like, no, you know, these are our friends. If we're good enough to interact in class, then we can do, you know, events and stuff together. And that's how they came about. But from our school system, it was always separated.
Well, you know, sister, I wanted to run this by you, as you were saying, not to get too far away from the homeschooling. They don't want you to homeschool your child. Some may remember when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I keep referencing him because the work that they did is revolutionary. The work that the new Black Panther Party and the old Black Panther Party has done is revolutionary. I must remind you, because of the work of the Black Panther Party and the new Black Panther Party and others, you have school crossing guards. Because of the work of the Panthers, you have a breakfast program. Because of the work of the Panthers, you have an after-school study program. I can speak to this and say this because, first of all, our babies were going to school hungry. And this research had already been done that if you're hungry, it's like a man. I mean, you want a man to come in this revolutionary store and the boycott and the blackouts. Well, he's not going to come in. I'm going to suggest that we have to feed him first. This is a poor man's movement. This is what Dr. King has talked about. Well, this is why he had the book, Why We Can't Wait. This is why it must be understood that the blackout and the boycotts of the school system is because of what's going on in the school system. It's no education. My sister, you said it right. It is a babysitting job. All they're concerned about is test scores, and those test scores they receive allow them to receive more money from the state and the federal government. So what they're doing is they're teaching your babies to pass a test.
Right.
Notice they just a test. And if your babies do not pass that test and they don't pass it, the school suffers. The school is labeled A, B, C, D, or F. And most of the F schools, research has shown the F schools in the black community. And I'll say something that Malcolm said, if you haven't heard it, it's to be true. So the homeschooling that we're doing is to be understood. But Malcolm said it best. He said, when you live in a poor neighborhood, you go to poor schools. When you go to poor schools, you get a poor education. You get a poor education because you have poor teachers. And when you do graduate with a poor education and those poor teachers, you can only get a job, a poor paying job, that allow you to continue to repeat that cycle. So this is a systemic problem that has to be addressed. So the blackouts and the boycotts, you keep wondering why you have a master's degree and a doctorate degree and you're not the head of General Motors. Because you're not the house Negro. You're not the coon. If you haven't seen the movie The Spook Who Sat by the Door, that's something to be studied. Need to study that. And so you get this poor education. You eat poor food. You work on a poor paying job. I call parents sometimes. And I say to them, Miss Brown, Miss Wilson, Miss Higginbottom, I hate to bother you. And when I listen to them, you know where they're working? They're working at McDonald's. They're working at Burger King. They're working at Wendy's. They're working at Crystal's. Some, and I've seen this, some mothers will even go and work in the strip club at night because they love their babies. They'll make sure they have something to eat. So some of them, they may work at night, but guess what they're doing? And I'm going to tell you, they're homeschooling their babies during the day. I got a student, a couple students right now, single mothers. They're driving taxi cabs. The child can't sleep or rest because she or he are worried about her mother. You do know that at one point in Jacksonville, they were killing taxi cab drivers. Man or female, they were just killing them and taking whatever money they had. So she was worried about her mother, so she can't sleep. But the homeschooling, these parents, the same ones I'm talking about, they love their children. They want the best for them. They recognize the schools have failed. So many homeschool. So where does this take us in the black and the boycott?
Snatching our kids out the school because, I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, go right ahead.
Start snatching our kids out the school system because, like you say, they implemented all those programs to where they set our kids up for failure, but now they don't even want them to graduate or get nowhere near graduation because, like you say, with those standardized tests, I know here in the state of Texas, you have to pass all three of those tests. You have to pass the math. You have to pass the reading. You have to pass the English. And it doesn't matter if your child performed straight A's, principal list, honor roll. If they didn't pass that standardized test, they still fail at the end of the year. So,
here's the catch, sister. Oh, I got to tell you this, and many don't know this. A child can pass a course. They need 24, 26 credits to graduate. They can pass a course with a D. And I've seen this happen to black children over and over again. And they go from sophomores and they go to juniors and they get promoted, just as what you're saying. And they haven't passed the test. But even if, this is the other part, even if they pass the test and sometimes they fail the course, they pass with a 1.5, a 1.8, and they pass those tests, they still do not get a high school diploma. Why? Because the trap is you can pass a course with a 1.0, but you must graduate. In order to graduate, you must have a 2.0. That's a trick. It's a trap. You heard me, right? This is the rules. You can pass, a D is passing. So your child, even if they pass those tests, and they have a 1.5, they get no high school diploma because they don't have a 2.0.
And that's that loophole law to where, you know, they're setting it up, for, setting your kid up for failure. So I promote homeschooling. Just being, you know, a single parent with three kids, it's just hard to, like you say, sometimes you have to work nights. You have to do a lot of sacrifices to make sure that you teach your kids, that you can teach your kids from home because it takes a lot of time. So I commend teachers and stuff that, you know, get up in there and they really want to teach the students. It's not about a paycheck. It's really about, you know, empowering and educating the students and stuff like that because it takes a lot of hard work and dedication.
I wanted to go back to something you spoke on, and I brought something home intentionally because this is one of the tools I look at, I teach the children this. Just like you have laws out here, you have to teach your children the laws of the school. I'm going back to Shakira and Naya, if we can do that for just a minute. Shakira and Naya are victims of white supremacy and racism at the highest level. And what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, they're not teaching us properly. I was able to dig up what they call the school board code of conduct for students. And in this code of student conduct at the secondary level, believe it or not, they have a code of conduct at the elementary level, and they have one at the secondary level. And so the rules at the elementary level are different than the rules at the secondary level. And so they give you all the procedures for administration. They have zero tolerance offenses for level 2, level 1. They have a minor offense, have intermediate offenses. They have zero tolerance offenses. And I wanted to share some of that. When you're talking about homeschooling, you're in the best position to discipline your child. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Ms. Farrakhan, has taught us, and Dr. Khalid, our brother, may Allah be pleased with him, has really spent a lot of time talking about a savage. A savage is a person who do not have knowledge of self and is living a beast life. Well, if the teachers are beasts, and they are, and your baby is civilized, at the end of the day, what do you think they're doing to your baby? They're making your baby a beast. So you in a civilized place, the best one to educate your child through homeschooling. But I wanted to share something, and I'm looking for it again. They have these devices. A use of a device to record a fight a school board employee. You know that's illegal? Your child can't just record the teacher. The use of a camera, a video, a phone. Cell phones is a class 2 offense. Look at this. Even if not profanity, it's a class 2 offense. Look at this. I'm going through this for a reason. I wanted to share this with you. Even if Naya failed to adhere to the rules, it's a class 2 offense. Well, what's the penalty for a class 2 offense? And I wanted to share this. The penalty for class 2 offense, 1, intentionally striking another student or adult, a class 2 offense, look at this, it's 1 to 5 days in school suspension. It's a behavior contract. It's a parent conference. It's restorative justice. That means we sit down, we conference you. If there's a dispute, look at this, well, she had a dispute in the classroom. It's a parent phone call. It's a behavior contract. Oh, I gotta give you a couple more on class 2 offenses so you know. The use of a device to record a fight a school board employee, which is what they said Naya was doing. And we were in South Carolina with Naya. Look what it is. A first-time occurrence. It's a parent conference. It's not 10-day suspension. It's a behavior contract. It's morning or after school detention. This is a secondary contract that most schools follow all across the country. Look at this. R is 1 to 5 days in school suspension. But look what they did. They called the police. They called the SRO. They went all the way to the third or fourth incident. And look what they said. 6 to 10 days out of school. Confiscation of the device. Referral to a hearing officer. How do you go from first offense to third and fourth offense? I can go on and on and on. See, our babies have to know this law. This, even if she directed obscene gestures. Look at this. Offensive language. They said she cussed, used profanity. Look at this. First time offense. In school suspension. Behavior. Restored to justice. And look at this. Loss of extracurricular activities. That means going to football games and basketball games for 10 days. But they went right to the fourth and third occurrence. They gave her 10 days out of school, referring to a hearing officer. This is unbelievable. So this is why we're blacking out and we're boycotting. Law, even in school, is not administered equally to your children, to our babies. Your boys, young black boys. Research has shown, mothers, please pay attention. Your black boys, no matter what grade level, are more likely to be targeted and suspended for misbehavior and labeled as ESE. That means they're labeled, you know that little yellow school, they're labeled as special ed. They're labeled now, even now they're labeling them as anger issues. So I had several little boys, young black men, come to me and say, I have an anger management problem. No, you don't have an anger management problem, brother. You have a conflict resolution issue. We have never taught or showed you how to resolve our problems, how to sit down and talk as young black men. We go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 5 seconds. We go from sitting down talking to I'm a bust you in the mouth in 5 seconds. Yes,
because
ma'am.
Because that was instilled in them, not because that they, you know what I'm saying, they have a behavior disorder or whatever, that was instilled in them. That's how they was taught to react, you know what I'm saying? If someone do something to you or disrespect you, you act this way towards them or whatever. But going back to what you were saying about the disciplinary and the behavior rules, back in the day, we used to write sentences. If you was talking in class, I will not talk in class. You might have to write 5 pages. I will not talk in class. I will not disrespect my teacher. You wrote until your hands hurt. And you had to, you know, bring those sentences back to your teacher. Like you say, you wouldn't be able to participate in PE or any extracurricular activities or whatever. They'll put you, isolate you and make you write sentences. But now it's like I have had my daughter get a call and they'd be like, oh, come pick her up. I'm looking like, huh? What does she do that you want to disrupt her learning so you want me to come pick her up from school? You know, she was disturbing the class. Okay, well, put her to the side by herself and make her do extra work. You know, it's not that you want her to be kicked out of school. So there, what I noticed is that the school programs is there wanting to get the kid kicked out. Like you say, they automatically get in school, out of school, suspension, suspended. And even they had on the news today in Texas that they have passed a law to where you cannot implement suspension and stuff on students pre-K to third grade or something like that, because they was even kicking out of kindergarten. You have a misunderstood 5-year-old, 6-year-old, okay, kick them out of school. Now they put a band on it. You cannot no longer suspend a child that's in pre-K through first grade.
Man, you know, you do remember that it was in Georgia where there was a third grade elementary girl, young girl, that was handcuffed by the police. Some people forget that. You forget that there was a third grader in Georgia, in Milledgeville, young black girl, third grader, which means that she was only about 9 years old. She was handcuffed by the police.
I remember that.
What? You remember that?
Yeah.
And this should have been age. What has happened is one of my sisters, I hope she comes online, Dr. Campbell, has talked about the fact that our babies are treated this way because it's to let the whites know that they can treat us this way, and the blacks know you're still in your slavery, you're still in conditional servitude. And so Ben Fields, what Ben Fields did in North Carolina and South Carolina was to let the other children know that they could disrespect us. And this came out 4 days later. You may remember on the internet, there was a white girl who was on the internet, it was caught on video, who was calling the young brother coon. She called him a nigger. She called him a jungle bunny. She called him all these names. And then she said, "What you going to do about it?" And she said, "That's what I thought, nothing." And she did it again. And then she did it a third time. And I'm not an advocate of a black man or any man ever hitting a woman, but the next thing you heard was, and what happened was, in between that, this one white girl, there were four or five other whites who stood around and supported this girl. And I noticed my young black brothers and sisters standing off, and this young brother just said, "Enough is enough." This took place in a high school science lab. My question is, where was the teacher where this was going on? Where was the teacher with all these racial epithets being? Where was the teacher?
Yes, she was ma'am. Outside because I seen that video clip, and when by the time he got through whooping her all the way back across the room, because she was trying to go get the teacher, she was headed out the door, and when the teacher came in, she was looking all appalled, like, "What's going on? You left your class unattended," and a fight broke out. You know what I'm saying? That's what happened. So the teacher had to be held accountable because you're not supposed to leave students unsupervised.
That's right. That's right. And this is going on. So the blackouts and the boycotts, we have to get our babies involved. They have to know. I'm at the point now where we have to make some extreme flyers. Let me say this. What we're doing now is beautiful. And I thank Dr. Malik, my brother, who I love dearly. I thank all of you. We're working hard. But here's the deal. We're going to have to put some pictures out there of people hanging from ropes and being lynched. Go back to the book that Brother Shalom Kweli mentioned about Without Sanctuary. You're going to have to go back to some of those books, and you're going to have to get those pictures, and you're going to have to add them to your flyers. See, this has to be understand what Dr. King said, we're redistributing the pain. We have to remind them over and over again while we're seeking justice, while we're seeking restitution. Yeah, we were seeking restitution. We're seeking settlement for the damages that have been done psychologically. Look at Ferguson, the psychological damage that has been inflicted on young black men in Ferguson because of Darren Wilson is a criminal. It's criminal. It is absolutely criminal. Black men, even myself, and I'm driving, I see a police car. You know your heart picks up 2 or 3 or 20 or 30 beats? You haven't done anything. It's psychological criminal warfare. And this happens in education. How do we know? Black children are still being put in standard and basic courses, and white European children are being put in advanced courses. Go check it out for yourself. I mentioned about young black boys being labeled ESC because of anger issues or because of lack of management issues. But guess what? Who do you think is on the football field? Who do you think is involved in sports? Who do you think is out there? I got to know. We got to open up. Sister Karen's on the line. I know you want some of this. And so who do you think is running up and down on the football field for the University of Missouri, for the University of Maine, for the University of, look at this, Alabama and Mississippi? I have to tell you, if our babies knew the history of the University of Alabama, if they knew the history of the University of Florida, that the University of Florida, black young children, 18, 19 years old, they couldn't live on the campus of the University of Florida. They had to live across the street. And don't you get excited because you went to HBCU. I don't mean to bust your bubble, but all or most of HBCUs have been named that way because of white Civil War heroes. Now, if you think I'm lying, you can go check this out. Howard University is named after a white Civil War hero. Shaw University is named after a white Civil War hero. Go check it out. Even you went to Savannah State. Savannah If you go study Savannah, where it came from is white race. It's named after Europeans. You say, well, I went to Tuskegee. Go look at what Tuskegee had to do to make the compromise with white Europeans to receive funding. All of this is real. I can go on and on and on. I can name many, many more black colleges that are named, they're named after white Civil War heroes. And we attend these schools, and guess what you have? You gotta accept it. You gotta have blackout and boycotts on the predominantly black, at the historically black colleges. Don't you have to take American history? Don't you have to take European world history? Don't you have to take European English literature? I'm just asking. Don't you have to take psychology 101? You're not taking black psychology 101. You're taking Freud. You're taking Piaget. I still remember who these crackers are. Excuse my language if it offends you. I'm just telling you, I still remember this day. Coburn and Piaget and Freud. You had to take all of this at predominantly black schools? They didn't give you black economic scientists. They gave you supply and demand theories from the European economic theorists, and all they said was just pass the test. Don't worry about it. So you got a watered-down version of economics. So you don't know anything about Claude Anderson, Powernomics. This is real. This is real. So we're being miseducated from the cradle to the grave. And that's what this is about. It's the blackouts and the walkouts and the boycotts. And I look at it today. Million-dollar slaves. That's what I'm trying to get to since our time is up. We got million-dollar slaves going to predominantly white schools, going after a dream that we tell them all the time from elementary and middle school. Don't go after being a professional football player. Use your mind. Being a professional basketball. Every little boy, I can tell you now, if I had a room of 100 black little boys between the ages of 5 and 15, every single one of them, maybe except for one or two, would tell me, I'm going to be in the NBA. I'm going to be in the NFL. Listen, this is what they're talking. I'm going to be that one. So they become what's called PARK, Park Legends. When they play in sports in the park, nobody care what your academic grades are. Nobody care whether you can read or write. Nobody care whether you can read or write. Listen to me. And even in the high school, they will pass you through till you can read or write until they deal with what they did in Connecticut, where a young man graduated from high school and was admitted to college to play football, and he could only read on a third grade level. But he was a great football player. These are the million-dollar slaves. They want Ray Ray. They want Pookie. They want all of them. He's a running back. He's a quarterback. I went down that road. Listen, man. They didn't. What happened in Missouri, sister? I got to get you in on this, Sister Karen. I want the sister to open up the line. We got to get to this. Listen. What happened in Missouri, I don't want us to fool ourselves. It had nothing to do with white people loving us because injustice was done. I'm going to say that again. What happened at the University of Missouri with the racial slurs and the feces and the swastikas had nothing to do with this man and this Tom. I call him, Uncle Tom, white Uncle Tom, Uncle Sam. Had nothing to do with him resigning because they love black people. Had nothing to do with them resigning because they felt like there should be social justice and they should honor Brown versus the Board of Education, Topeka, Kansas, that all of us should be integrated now and we should forgive each other for what they've done. No, 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 no. Let me say this. It's about the third. You may not know this. Missouri, no matter who they play, is slated to make 25 to $30 or $40 million this weekend. And you say, well, how's that? TV revenues. This stadium, like University of Michigan, my brother Dr. Wesley can bear witness to this. The University of Michigan, last I knew, it had 120,000-seat football stadium, and it's been sold out for the next 5 years outside of student seats. sold out. Money is not made in professional sports. Don't fool yourself. That's great. The athletes make money at that level. Most of the money in the millions and billions of dollars is transpired will take place this Saturday in the football stadiums, and that's why we got to boycott some of the football stadiums. That's why we're going to have to boycott Justice or Else. The blackouts, the million-dollar slaves running up and down the field, when they leave, they get nothing. They get a degree and can beg for a job. Or they get no degree, and they still got to beg for a job. Staying there 4, 5, 6, and sometimes 7 years to play college football to pursue a dream in the NFL that they will never get. This is real. I didn't mean to go on about that, but you need to know. Tom, whatever his name, Chance and others, they got a $2 million, I guarantee at a minimum, maybe $3 million settlement to just go ahead and resign. We don't have a problem with it. But guess what? I'm willing to bet you they pop at some other university. Or they pop up in some other job in that same university making money if it's needed. But we'll pay you $1.5 million, $2 million. Just go ahead and resign. Don't worry about it. And how do you know the next devil's going to treat you right? Because Honorable Elijah Muhammad said they never treated us right, and they never teach us right. So anyway, sister, I didn't mean to go on. I am passionate about this because I lived that life as a former college football player and quarterback at these predominantly white schools. And you don't get to go out there and quarterback with all of these boys, white boys and others, being a fool. I can tell you one day when we get time why they sat me down. I did what we do in the neighborhood. Yes, I was young and I got drunk and had a good time, and I can understand T.J. Barrett being sat down at Ohio State because I got sat down. Got sat down before a bowl game. This happens. This is life. But guess what? They still like, this is our nigga. Excuse me. That's how they saw me. Anyway, sister, we got to talk about Missouri and this money and the blackout and the boycotts, and we got to talk about how do we get to our college students. This is a beautiful conversation.
Also, she's made it on the line, too.
Who's that, Sister Aminette and Sister Karen? Both?
Yes.
Yes, sisters. Let me close my mouth.
Hello?
I really love to hear from what the sisters are saying. And I have to say, sisters, I love the spirit and love the passion you all bring. And you have to understand, I say, I'm a different brother. They'll tell you. I will give you the shirt off my back because I know all the hell the black woman catch in America from us as black men, and I know you catch it from this devil every day, every day.
Yes.
Yeah. Please go right ahead, sisters.
Thank you.
Wow.
Sister Karen?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you doing?
Black Power. I'm good. I'm good. Are y'all doing all right, Black Power? All day, every day. Let me tell you something. I have a very graphic analogy that I've always told people, and I hope you guys can go with me on this story. Black people are like an aborted baby crawling back to its mother that had it aborted. The first thing that aborted baby with the eyeball popped out, its head off, arm broken, feet gone, toes missing, skin hanging off, finally crawls back to its mother and says, "Why did you do this to me? And can you fix me?" The first thing that that baby is going to find out, that black baby, is that it's a surrogate. That's not your real mother. And she don't love you. That's black people with white people. Crawling back, eyeball popped out, neck broke, skull fractured, arms broken, toes missing, skin off, going to white people begging to be repaired. The first trick is that she can't repair you. You know why? Because she doesn't know where the parts go. She doesn't know how to put a black lip together. She can't put black hair on a head. She don't know how to fix the DNA and the genes. She doesn't know how that black skin's supposed to line up. She doesn't know how your toes are supposed to look, because she doesn't know you like that. So what do you have to do? That's black people's first heartbreak with white people. We keep asking them to fix this, but they don't have the love for us to give a damn to fix this, because they don't recognize you. They fix their own kids. They know about that white hair, them blue eyes, the way they talk to each other and this sort of thing. That's familiar. That's family. They don't know how to fix your black self.
It starts with
loving yourself. You know what that little aborted baby has to do? Love himself to stop looking over here at the white people and finally look in the mirror and go, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can put my own eye in my own head. I don't know what to do, and I'm not sure because no one has taught me how. But if I care enough about myself, and that's self-love, I will take the time to figure out where this black eye goes in this black skull, and what this black hair on this thing, and these arms, I'm going to fix them, and I'm going to mend them, and I'm going to put bandages on them, and I'm going to put splints on them. Look at me, I'm coming together. I'm coming together, everybody. Your skin, you let it heal. You give it time. You don't rush it. Let it be itself. Nobody else going to help you. That skin's been hanging off for a while. Look, it's coming together. I'm giving myself a chance. I'm giving myself a chance to heal. My legs, fix them up so that they can stand strong and sturdy. And then you stand on that broken leg, it falls again. Because you aren't sure. You look around again at everybody else's legs, looking at white people, see how to fix it. So you put your hair on, you put your fake hair. You're trying to put pieces where pieces are missing because, you want to give up. But then you say, fuck it. I'm going to study myself again because I want a real solid standing. Maybe I can get this joint in here good. I'm going to care for myself. I'm going to care. And when you finally do that, and that's self-love not only with an individual, but it's with the people. We as a people are in the midst of healing ourselves by ourselves on our own, and we are all on our own journey. And when we find another aborted, tore-up black person who is building themselves and put their own eye in their own socket and found the teeth and put all the pieces together and put the brain cells back up in there, and you found your pineal gland and you found all these things, when I see you, I recognize you. You just like me. You just built yourself up. That's a conscious black revolutionary. I see you. Come over here. Come over here.
And sister, we talked about that in the homeschooling, and that's the key. As long as we allow somebody else to educate our babies and to teach our babies, they're going to teach them their ways and their lifestyle and their culture, their mores and their norms.
And can you blame them? Can you blame them? If I built
so
a building
only
right
way
now,
we
if
have
I built
to teach
a building, when,
yes,
when
right,
we were segregated,
we have to teach ourselves. And that's what we're talking about, teaching our babies.
Yes.
That's what homeschool. Some of you may have missed that in the beginning. We start out the homeschool,
uh-huh.
And we talk about homeschooling. As much as 100,000, 200,000 black parents are homeschooling their children, but the rules have changed. This is a trap. Sister Roxy, I can't thank you enough for starting us off this morning somewhere in the world. I've been up so late. But let me just say this. The rules have changed. And I know that in Texas and in Florida and other places, you used to have the leeway to homeschool your child any way you want. But because of money and dollars, the blackout and the boycotts, this is where we come in.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called FTE dollars. See, your child is allocated. Your child, by simple birth right now, no matter where they are, every year is allocated $5,000 $6,000, in some places $8,000 for your child to be educated in the public school system. If your child does not go to that school system, this is where you're talking about, sister, so strong. They still get the money at that school, and you must go to the school system and register that you're homeschooling, and your child still must pass the same test that they're passing at the state and the local school levels. Why am I saying this? Because this is the trap. They're trying to force us to keep our babies in these killing fields, in these public plantations of miseducation called public schools, which are nothing but day prisons. They're day prisons with barbed wire fence. Because when your baby, you know, they close the fence, they lock the gate, and you can't even get in to see your child who you dropped off in the morning without seeing either a school resource officer being buzzed into the front office. It is a day prison. It's a trap. Yes,
it's
ma'am.
A programming system. 12 years it takes to tear your brain out and reprogram it. Everybody thinks along the same accord, feeding them the same dreams, of course not feeding our children the same once again because they don't care. They don't care if you can read or write. They could care less, but they can relate with their own kids. When we were segregated, man, look, my mother has look, all I'm going to say is this. When we were segregated, I don't know if you have relatives that skipped 2 and 3 grades, because you got the attention from a woman who looked like your mother, and she looked at you like her child. She cared. She took the time to teach you and show you. But let me tell you something. Back in the, I believe it was the late 60s, there was a man named John Churchville who financed his own little program, and I believe it was in Philadelphia. And if you want to check it out, it's in a piece which is narrated by Bill Cosby, and it's called Black History Lost, Stolen, or Strayed. And it's a brilliant exercise, and I think we should bring it back. And what he did, I mean, it'll give you goosebumps. What he was doing is taking little children starting from ages 17 months up to maybe 5 or 6 years old, and he was preparing them for the beating that they were going to get when they got into the school system. So he would ask a 4-year-old, he would say, "How old are you, John?" And the little boy, they'd ask him to stand up. "I am 4 years old." He would act like a white person and say, "No, you're not. You're not 4 years old. You're 8 years old. Now, how old are you, John?" "I am 4 years old." "No, no, no. Sit it. Hey, if I pull out a ruler and tell you I'm going to hit your butt, will you say that you're 8 years old?" Tears in his eyes. He's standing there, quivering. "I am 4 years old." This is what we, the parents, really need to be doing. But this is what I think needs to be infiltrated as a concept. We need to start preparing our children for the brainwash, making them emotionally stable and making them secure in their identity before they go through that, is mandatory at this time. We don't have the alternatives. By law, they must be processed in a 12-year programming system called the public school system. But the truth is that if the parents can't do it, we as a community need to come together and figure out a way to save our children's brains. And we need to start preparing them for the emotional breakdown, the emotional lynching that they are inevitably going to face.
Well, I agree with that because, like you say, we need to implement our own program, and the only way we can do that is by snatching them out. Snatching our kids out of public school, trying to implement homeschooling, and with this being, like I say, public school daycare, a lot of people, you're not going to get a lot of people say, "Oh, I want to snatch my school out." But if you open up, like, K-12.com, they have online, like, if you want your students to be, your child to be at home school or whatever, they have it to where they'll send you a laptop, they'll send you the programs and the homework and assignments and like that, and you can do it at home. Okay, we can do that. We can get
That's right. We can do that little by little. We can. We really can. We really can.
Yeah.
And you know what? We don't have to force feed our movement to anybody. It's just like a good religion or a very exemplary person. Have you ever met somebody and they were so wonderful and loving and amazing that you just wanted what they had? She didn't sit down and say, here's why I'm so amazing. You wanted what they had. When you're doing something amazing, when you're being something incredible, people want what you got, and you don't even have to try. If you're a Christian and you're a good Christian, you don't have to run around force feeding it to people and indoctrinating and hitting them with the dogma. You just be a good person. You just be a good person, and I'm going to go where you go.
You know,
so if you're doing something good and amazing, people are going to follow you.
Right, and you know, sister, others who are coming out, one of the points that we're making tonight is where do we go from here and why we can't wait, which is one of the books. You know, there's a book called Die, Nigga, Die by H. Rap Brown.
Mm.
And that book, picture on the front, black man, and he's being accosted by white police officers. Our children see this day in and day out.
I got that
but
book.
Here's the deal. We have to look at now, and Dr. Malik is coming on the line. He just texted. He'll be on the line in a second. We have to decide, which is part of our mission tonight. Look, this can't be the only education forum. The first thing we have to do, even in this movement, start with education. And tonight, there's just so much on the table. We've jumped around from Shakira and Naya. We've jumped around to homeschooling. We've jumped around to discipline. We really haven't done justice to Missouri. We haven't done justice to our black students on predominantly white campuses. We haven't done justice to our black students on black campuses who are also being miseducated. And so we have to talk about how do we get the blackout to them. That's our focus. How do we get them involved in the blackout? How do we begin to reach out and touch them? I believe everybody in this line has a responsibility to go to some college or university tomorrow and just stand there as they all eat lunch. Stand there as they walk in the lunch or dinner and hand them a flyer, blackouts, and then set up a meeting with the black student organizations on those campuses, meet, and I guarantee you we'll begin to see this thing take off. But we got to go to those campuses, and we got to stand there, and we got to have the courage to stand, simply hand out the flyers and say, I would like to meet, and let the students organize a meeting. Dr. Malik spoke with Howard University tonight, and there's some people, I know there's some questions. This subject on education is too monumental to just limit it to one night and 2 hours. I mean, I'd like to come out and just be quiet and hear Sister Aminette, Sister Karen, Sister Roxy. Sister Roxy, you come from a family of educators. I'd like to have you bring a couple of those educators on. Those people. Those who teach our babies tell you exactly what we need to do. So, Dr. Malik, we're waiting for Dr. Malik. Is he in the queue? Is Dr. Malik in the queue, Sister? He's been texting. I'm ready to bring him out, man. I know he was speaking this night at Howard University. I'd like to hear him speak to us for a minute. He says he's on the line. You see his number. Let me help you if you don't know his number. It's 202-369-99. Do you see that number? 202. Cue him in, sister. Yes, ma'am. And sister and brothers, sisters, I said sisters, listen, we didn't even get to the questions. I know there are people out there in the queue. This is why we have to come back in education.
Dr. Malik,
Salaam Alaikum, Black Power.
Alaikum Salaam and Black Power. And, man, congratulations to you all on the show tonight. And is Mother Aminette here on the line?
What's her number?
Who did the host?
Yes,
so
she
was
speaking
tonight?
Just a minute ago. Yes, sir.
She was?
Yes, sir. She's there. Sister Aminette.
Well, let me say Black Power and greetings, Hotep, to her also, Professor Aminette, to you, our host for the night, Professor James Muhammad, Sister Roxy, and others who are in the National Blackout Movement, Shabazz University, and just in the liberation movement in general. I just want to give the greetings to everybody and to say that I've come from Howard University, where the students appear to be okay right now. It is going on the 10 o'clock hour, and it was promised by those who were threatening that they would kill the students at the 10 o'clock hour. And I was there at the 7 o'clock hour. I was to lecture at St. Kofa Bookstore. But we took everybody from the bookstore over to support the students who were meeting by the flagpole who were dealing with an emergency crisis. So the emergency crisis took precedence over the lecture because the crisis was about struggle and action. And so student organization ubiquity gathered around the flagpole, and within a certain point in time, several hundred students had gathered and spoke their piece and in a big circle gathered and peace and affirmed their blackness, affirmed their right to have their space and their place, and affirmed that in their own way of saying it, that they don't die, they multiply. And I was proud. I was proud of those students, and I was happy to be there to support them. And as an alumni of Howard University School of Law, to support them. Sister Tahita, who was the National Blackout Student Representative, New Black Panther Party, local representative, and an all-around dynamic, young, talented queen of ours, spoke well and strong and is clearly one of the most revolutionary students on campus. And so we're happy to work with her and guide her so that they don't try to squash her, because it's an all-out alert. Even though the students are standing up, it's an all-out alert for revolutionaries on Howard's campus. And they're going to make sure that even if you are, anyway, they're going to make sure that your revolution will be goddamn monitored. monitored, maintained, and sustained and restrained. Nevertheless, I'm happy for the students, and we have to work with the students everywhere. They are our future. They are our hope. And
yes, sir.
They are the ones that are the intelligentsia. If they can avoid being compromised by Uncle Tom's everywhere seeking to compromise,
yes,
struggling, if they can avoid it, they will carry us to the future. So I say on with the national blackout. We must put a penalty. All of this means we must penalize white America. The events in Missouri, the events at Howard University, this white man keeps bothering us, and we have to put a penalty on this enemy. And that's why we keep driving forward. I'm going to turn it back into y'all hands. I love each and every one of you. God bless you. I'm happy just
Dr.
for
Malik,
you all to be able to have a platform.
We still haven't mentioned the locations that you ask us to. I think Sister Roxy may, I don't know, I don't want to put that on her too much. She's done such a great
job.
We'll
be back on the air tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, the youth will be back on the air from 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. The show will be back on. All of the cities will come on that will come on to talk about their specific locations, Oklahoma, Norfolk, New York City, and Newark. All of the people are coming on to get down to the specifics of what they're doing. They'll be on tomorrow night and Sunday. So don't worry about it. We was meant to talk about education tonight. Okay, God bless
Malik,
y'all.
Really,
I'm going to let you go.
On education, but time is on us, and I know that we're asking for more time because it's just education should be our first vehicle to teach. So we're talking about going to the college campuses and rallying those students up. Going to the high schools and rallying those students up. Going to the middle schools and rallying them up. If it means just giving them a flyer in the morning and let them go to school and cause hell for the teachers all day long with this blackout and telling their teachers about it, that's what we got to do.
Well, we appreciate y'all. Y'all keep holding the line, and then you will have another chance. Because not only here, and you will be on here to co-host here often on this night, but then Shabazz University has to establish his own show on, it just has to establish its own show, preferably on Sundays. We can get back to that. So there will be more time available for education, especially as Shabazz University opens and grows and does what it's supposed to do. So, yes, we're gonna open up more time for these subjects. I got to go. God bless y'all. Keep teaching the truth. Good job, Brother James Muhammad. Let's give him a strong black hand. Black Hand. Y'all come on next week. You come back next week and do another show here next week, same time, same black channel. We'll stay on the radio as much as we can. Black Power.
Black Power. Black Power. I wanted to really turn over to Sister Roxy and Sister Aminette, and I wanted to take more of a back seat because I heard so much passion, and we only have about 10 minutes at the most, and we thank Dr. Malik. But this is about the blackout and the boycotts. I mean, I can't emphasize enough that right now, we have to really reach out to the college students, the high school students. These are the children that Dr. King used and why he talked about using the movement, Why We Can't Wait. And these are the ones that H. Rapp Brown, if you don't know, I'll say this, and I'm going to turn it over to my sisters. If there's a saying in Jacksonville, they were so scared of H. Rapp Brown coming to town, they had a rap song. They say when H. Rapp Brown come to town, they say when they left, the children and the youth burned it down. Everywhere he went, there was fire. That's real. Everywhere he went, there was a fire. So may Allah bless us, brother and sister. Sister Aminette, Sister Roxy, we were talking about the homeschooling, and we were talking about, didn't even get to talk more about the million-dollar slaves at Missouri and these other universities. Think of a black man at Mississippi State, not Mississippi, Mississippi and Alabama, playing football after all the lynchings and murders that went on there. That's a shame. That's a shame. But we're million-dollar slaves. Man.
They just took down the Confederate flag for Ole Miss. I mean, Mississippi had to fight. They've been fighting for years just to get the Confederate flag down for the Ole Miss University as their school flag. You know, they really put up a fight for that Confederate flag.
I'd like to give us a homework assignment if no one's going to say anything. This weekend, take a look at when Michigan and Indiana and Ohio State and Alabama and Missouri and all these schools are playing football. Each of these schools are making $25 to $30 million each game. I'm telling you. And that money goes right into the universities, and the athletes get nothing. Now look who is in the stands. I want you to take a look. It's like the old Roman Colosseum, the lion and Daniel in the lion's den. Look who's out there running around the football field, smashing helmet to helmet. We're entertainment. So they didn't go to Missouri to start no revolution. They came there to be the entertainment on the basketball court and on the football field. And now they're asking the question, excuse my language, who's waking up my Negroes? Who's waking them up? Well, it's the blackouts, the boycotts, it's you and us. That's it. Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead, Sister Roxy.
Well, what I want people to realize is that our students, the black students, are at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to school. I look at the Texas being predominantly Hispanic. They have a lot of Hispanic people here. The Hispanic kids, when they graduate from high school, guess what? They can go out and get a job as a customer service agent. You know, so they're bilingual. They're getting paid anywhere from $13 to $15 an hour. Guess what? A high school diploma, being a bilingual and having a high school diploma, they're employable. Well, our students, black students, when they graduate from high school, they have to go to college. They have to get a trade. They have to get additional skills. They have to get a college degree, associate's, bachelor's, or whatever, just to perform in the workforce. Well, we have students that's in other communities that they graduate from high school and they're employable. They go straight to the workforce. They don't. It's an option for them to get additional education, you know. And that's another reason why, you know, we have to start boycotting schools. We have to start boycotting businesses. We have to get this money saved up. We have to open up our own schools and get our students pulled out because, like you say, it is a slave mentality.
We have, and we need to take over the PTA. Take over what they call the school advisory council. The school advisory council, you decide who the principal are. You decide who's going to work there as teachers. We take it over. Why did I say we take it over? Because when you take it over, you can make those decisions how the money is spent. The idea is not to integrate. But again, I agree with Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Separation is the best and only solution. I think, I don't know, Sister Aminette or Sister Karen that was speaking to this, until we teach ourselves the truth about ourselves, we won't know who we are, won't know where we're going, won't know how we get there. We need some clear goal and objectives. And that's why this education piece is important. I was going to mention, we're looking at setting up a second blackout line. This is only 2 hours a day. 2 hours a day is not enough. So we're working on that. I talked with Sister Roxy tonight. We're looking at setting up a second line at a different time. So when you come out of one, you get fired up and go to another. Why? Because we've got to focus on, I'm an educator, we got to focus on education economics. We got to focus on the blackout and the boycotts. And all this is going to be in support of Shabazz University, the Sankofa University, the New Black Panther Party, the Nation, all these. We got to come together as one. And that's what our dean, a minister who's 102, said. He said, we got to be brothers in this struggle or we won't make it. We have to be brothers and sisters.
Right.
Sister, I don't know if we have anything else. I know time is upon us. How much time do we have that you set us up for? Do we have much time we have left?
We have 60 seconds.
Oh, my goodness. Well, would you like, I'll just say, Black Power, Black Power, Black Power. We're going to come back. I thank everybody. Listen,
yes.
Dr. Malik, I pat me in the back, but I say to my sisters, I love you. You're my sisters. I told you I will fight for you, man. And I know Dr. Malik will fight for you. I say to God be the glory, any success we have. Sister Roxy, would you like to close us with any closing remarks? I thank you again for setting us up for tonight.
Well, everybody just tune in. We thank everybody for tuning in tonight. Tune in for tomorrow night. We're going to have more scheduling coming up, more guest speakers, more information to spread out to our community, more ideas, and everybody just be safe and have a great night.
Thank you, sister. We said everybody out here, besides Shea Hotel, free the land, free the people, liberty or death, black power, blackouts, boycotts, walkouts, black power, black power, black power.
Black power.
Is there a number I need to press? Yes, ma'am.